WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Mountaintops, deserts, and lonely coves are sometimes described as empty places, and to some people, empty means useless. Paul Gruchow finds it essential to leave the comforts of home and take time to experience the wilderness and these empty places. When he returns home, he reflects on the new landscapes in his essays. His new collection, The Necessity of Empty Places, is about his outings to the Sand Hills of Nebraska, the Blue Mounds of Minnesota, the Bighorn Mountains of Wyoming, and other places in the West. Gruchow lives on the prairie of southwestern Minnesota. I asked him if there are specific times in his life when he needs to head for the wilderness.
Well, I think the feeling hits me most often in the summertime. Partly that's a throwback to the days when I lived on the farm and when I understood, we were taught this vigorously from the beginning, that in the summertime, decent, honorable people were out doing some sort of physical work. I find it's very hard for me to write in the summer. It always has been because I think I ought to be out doing something. And so in the summertime, I find myself heading into the hills.
I'd like to ask you to read a passage from
Sure.
your book. And I think this passage gives a sense of one of the things that appeals to you about picking up and leaving.
I like the idea of life lived at the edge. A spruce tree at the upper limits of the mountain tree line, thick and misshapen, shorn of its branches on its windward side, no more than shoulder high, although it may be a century old. Such a spruce speaks powerfully of the persistence of life. Every person who enters the wilderness goes in search of the same speech. A journey into the wilderness is a test of the will against the odds. Going into the wilderness, any wilderness, is a way of opening yourself to the possibility of danger and to the likelihood of discomfort at the least. There is the possibility of getting lost, of being trapped in a storm, of confronting an angry animal, of falling. There are the certain hardships of arduous walks, of exposure to cold, heat, wind, rain, of sleeping on the ground, of solitude. To be alone is sometimes the most difficult challenge of all. It is, in itself, an art for which we are ill-equipped, both by training and by experience. To confront the unknown and to meet its challenges is to be admitted into a permanently enlarged world, just as the tortured spruce tree at the edge of the upper forest enlarges and frees the world for trees, so our encounters with wilderness widen and free us.
You know, one of the things that interested me about that passage is that, you know, I think of some people going out into the wilderness for real macho reasons to see if they can conquer, and others for more meditative reasons, and I kind of put you in the more meditative category, but in that passage you really talk about the challenge, about the test of will against the odds.
I think one of the things that we often miss in our lives, although I must say I feel that when I go to a place like New York City, is the sense of fear. Most of us live our lives in comfortable cocoons. We go from houses to jobs, and if we survive the office politics, we know that we can survive life as a whole. But we really need to feel, I think, challenged by that physical world, and we just don't get it in everyday life. So I really do think that's one of the reasons to go into the wilderness, although, as you say, I don't like that macho stuff that sometimes gets sold. I don't think going into the wilderness and racing against time and climbing the highest mountains and doing it in the shortest amount of time, that sort of thing doesn't appeal particularly to me. I think the best way to go into any wilderness is the best way to go into a landscape, no matter where it is, and that's slowly and with your eyes and ears open and with your sense of touch alive and to experience second by second what happens there.
Do you see your essays fitting into a larger literary tradition?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's a tradition that was started by Gilbert White in 18th century England and carried forward in this country first by Thoreau and then by a long line of wonderful writers coming down into this century toward such writers as Lauren Isley, a wonderful Nebraska writer, I think, who ought to be much better known, and to modern people like John McPhee and Annie Dillard. It's a great tradition, and it's a tradition that is really sort of left out of our cultural life in some way. It doesn't get into the science departments of universities because it's not quite a science, actually, this natural history stuff, and it doesn't get into literature departments because it's not conventional literature. So it's a sort of lost force in specialized terms, but one that's very much alive, I think, in our literature, and an important one. Mm-hmm. I see myself very much as part of it.
One of the chapters in your new book is about going mountain climbing with a friend.
Yes.
And as you got higher, you both got altitude sickness. Your symptoms were a pounding head. His symptoms were an upset stomach, severe diarrhea. I'd like you to read the passage right after you described his symptoms and your symptoms and the increasing distress you were both experiencing.
The gruesome truth of walking in high places, yes. The art of wilderness walking is the knack of adjusting your expectations to reality, of taking circumstances as they come. You enter the wilderness expecting to find the expansiveness of space, the intimacy of caverns, the solitude of rocks, the music of birds, the silence of stars, the fragrances of flowers, the depths of waters. And you do. But you also encounter fogs and mists, sudden rain showers, the whining of mosquitoes, the bites of flies, trails that disappear, rocks that stub your toes, the cloying heat of midday, the gnawing cold of midnight, lumpy beds, aching muscles. One gray morning, you awaken unrested, pull on your stinking socks, find that the stove won't light, force yourself to eat a nauseating breakfast of cold instant oatmeal, which you remember now that you have always hated and can't imagine why you brought, and, surveying the skies, see that you are going to spend the day walking in a drizzle. This is the litmus test, the moment when you expect a good companion to say, without a hint of irony, "Well, ready whenever you are."
Well, this story has a happy ending. You and your friend make it to the summit. You have lunch there and then head back. But I was wondering if you ever turned around, if you ever felt overpowered by the symptoms or fear or the discomfort.
Well, there's one occasion when I was walking in the Beartooth Mountains on the Wyoming-Montana border and somehow had gotten myself hopelessly lost and had wandered for 3 or 4 days through that wilderness with 2 maps in my hand, one for the Wyoming part of the wilderness and one for the Montana part of it, uncertain which map even to look at because I didn't know what state I was in. And it got very cold. It got down into at least the low 20s and started to drizzle, and I was lonely. I'd been on the road for a long time and terribly miserable. And I did turn back finally. I figured out where I was and got myself turned around, and I was absolutely headed out of that wilderness, and I was never going to go into one again in my life. And along the way, I stopped at a wonderful alpine lake, and the sun came out, and a raven came to entertain me, and the world looked sweet, and I was lost again, and the mosquitoes had gone away, and I went for another 5 days.
As much as you love different landscapes and the outdoors, you really hate nature shows. You're very critical of nature shows. And I want you to explain your criticisms.
Well, they serve a purpose of a kind, I suppose. They get people excited about a subject that certainly I'm very much interested in. But I think there's a lot of trivializing that goes on in that sort of program. There's a tendency to suggest that nature is an amusement and simply a set of amazing oddities. And the sense that we really need is the sense that we ourselves are part of nature, that we're one with it, that it isn't something we look at from a distance with a vague sense of interest, but something that we embrace, something that we recognize as we recognize members of our own family.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Paul Gruchow's book of essays, The Necessity of Empty Places, is published by St. Martin's Press. He spoke to us from KSJN in St. Paul. This is Fresh Air.